Now, Robin was an exceptionally wise and thoughtful person. She was a qualified spiritual director as well as a pastor. She had been a follower of Jesus for many decades. She was also a writer. And she has left a significant legacy in her writings. And so today we're going to spend a little time hearing some of how she processed going through a very difficult time. She spoke about her journey with cancer at Matt's Christian Medical Fellowship Conference in Auckland in May. So she was preparing to give her thoughts to a wider audience. She was expecting to speak to a group of Baptist pastors in Dunedin 3 weeks ago, and she was expecting to speak to North Point Church last Sunday, on both occasions sharing her journey and what she felt she had learnt as a person and as a pastor through her 2 years with cancer. When it became clear that she was too unwell to keep either of those speaking engagements, she asked Mike and Rachel, two of the other pastoral staff at North Point, and me to go through her journals and her speaking notes to prepare something to present on her behalf. It was a huge privilege to be asked to do that and to be able to spend a couple of days while Robin was in the hospice learning some of what she had learnt and reading how she had processed that very difficult time. So as a continuation of our series on seven-day spirituality, on letting God speak in every part of our lives, today we're going to spend some time focusing on how to live and die well in God's steady presence. Focusing on how to let God speak into the very last part of our lives, whether we are young or old. This morning we're going to hear some of Robin's own thoughts about dying well, taken from her journals, from her speaking notes, and from an essay that she wrote, a personal essay. Four women from West are going to read different extracts from her writings. Not as a memorial to Robin, this is not because some of us knew and loved her, but because she was a thoughtful and articulate writer, and she was able to share something that she had learnt that God was teaching her. And we hope that each one of us at different parts of our lives will find something in her writings to relate to, and something in her writings through which God will speak to us about our own lives. Before our four friends come up to read from Robin's writings, we're going to frame this with three other different things to help us think about the place of death in our world and where death fits with God and the hope that we have in the middle of hard times. And I think this weekend, with the two tragedies in the South Island, is not a bad time to be contemplating these things. First, we're going to hear a classic children's story, then a poem, and then a movie clip from the movie Wit, which the movie group will be playing on Tuesday night at the Cannells Place. Anyone who is not normally part of the movie group is welcome to join if this resonates with you, 7 o'clock at 53 Karamea Street. So first we have a children's story, The Runaway Bunny, which Jocelyn is going to come and read, and we have pictures on the screen. So kids especially may like to focus, and parents, you might like to be thinking about how this will relate to your family. Thanks, Jocelyn.
Once there was a little bunny who wanted to run away. So he said to his mother, "I'm running away." "If you run away," said his mother, "I will run after you, for you are my little bunny." "If you run after me," said the little bunny, "I will become a fish in a trout stream, and I will swim away from you." "If you become a fish in a trout stream," said his mother, "I will become a fisherman and I will fish for you." "If you become a fisherman," said the little bunny, "I will become a rock on a mountain high above you." "If you become a rock on a mountain high above me," said his mother, "I will be a mountain climber, and I will climb to where you are." "If you become a mountain climber," said the little bunny, "I will be a crocus in a hidden garden." "If you become a crocus in a hidden garden," said his mother, "I will be a gardener, and I will find you." "If you are a gardener and find me," said the little bunny, "I will be a bird and fly away from you." "If you become a bird and fly away from me," said his mother, "I will be a tree that you come home to." "If you become a tree," said the little bunny, "I will become a little sailboat and I will sail away from you." "If you become a sailboat and sail away from me," said his mother, "I will become the wind and blow you where I want you to be." "If you become the wind and blow me," said the little bunny, "I will join a circus and fly away on a flying trapeze." "If you go flying on a flying trapeze," said his mother, "I will be a tightrope walker and I will walk across the air to you." "If you become a tightrope walker and walk across the air," said the bunny, "I will become a little boy and run into a house." "If you become a little boy and run into a house," said the mother bunny, "I will become your mother and catch you in my arms and hug you." "Shucks," said little bunny, "I might just as well stay where I am and be your little bunny." And so he did. "Have a carrot," said mother bunny.
Sometimes in books there are two layers of meanings, aren't there? That was a story about a mother and a little child, but it could also be a story about God and us, and the lengths that God will go to find us and keep us safe and chase us. We can never run away from God. We are always safe, might be the message of that book. Could I have a representative from every family with children in the church to come and grab a piece of paper? It might be a child or it might be an adult who comes up. What I've just given out is I spent some time with the Pukeariki Children's Librarian this week, and that's a list of books for children, probably not as old as some of the children who took a list. A list of picture books that deal with issues of death and dying and grief a little more explicitly than the story we just saw. So if you think that that might be useful for your family, then I just wanted to give you some resources. When we think about death and dying and grief, I think it's important to start with something like the runaway bunny, to make it clear that death and dying and grief are all smaller than God. That God's power to keep us safe is much bigger than death's power. And that's also the message of this poem that I'd like to read. It's going up on the screen. I'd like to give you just a minute to read through, to skim through and see what you think. It's a poem by the 17th century poet John Donne. It's a sonnet. It has some old language, which some of you will love and some will hate, and that's okay. I hope that perhaps the runaway bunny was better for you if this is not your thing. If there's a bit too much to take in, the first two lines and the last two lines might speak the loudest to you, and I'd like to read this poem now. Death, be not proud, though some have called thee mighty and dreadful, for thou art not so. For those whom thou think'st thou dost overthrow, die not, poor death. nor yet canst thou kill me. From rest and sleep, which but thy picture be, much pleasure then from thee much more must flow, and soonest our best men with thee do go, rest of their bones and soul's delivery. Thou'rt slave to fate, chance, kings, and desperate men, and dost with poison, war, and sickness dwell, and poppy your charms can make us sleep as well, and better than thy stroke. Why swell'st thou then? One short sleep past, we wake eternally, and death shall be no more. Death, thou shalt die. This poem is important in the movie, which we're about to see a clip of. A movie called Wit, starring Emma Thompson, is about an English professor who specialises in these poems, the Holy Sonnets of John Donne. And as she is diagnosed with aggressive cancer, that poem is helpful in her journey. This is a clip of 5 minutes that we'll watch, and if you'd like to see more, the movie group will be watching it on Tuesday night this week.
This is a section that Robin wrote when she was undergoing all the weeks of radiotherapy in Hamilton. She spent much of her time writing a 9,000-word personal essay as part of applying for a doctoral program in Australia. The marker said it was the best application essay he'd ever read and thought it should be published. The assignment was to relate her own spiritual and theological development from childhood to the present. As 2003 and my degree studies drew to a close, my thoughts were still not in the direction of full-time ministry. There was a 20-hour-a-week position soon to be advertised in my own church for which I was preparing an application. It was only as I was comparing role descriptions and expectations that I stumbled across an advertisement for a full-time associate pastor at North Point Baptist Church in New Plymouth, a city 2 hours north of Whanganui where I had always lived. Sensing God's invitation to extend ourselves beyond our local situation, with my husband's support and encouragement, I applied for the position and was successful. Fully confident of the righteousness and God of this new beginning, I entered with great joy and expectation into the next chapter of my life, little realizing what would result from my having to face the new realities that laid ahead. My role at North Point was the newly created Pastor of Adult Ministries. In a rapidly growing church, around 2,000 adults at the time, I was responsible for coordinating small group ministries, pastoral care, prayer, and what was termed fellowship and inclusion, the work of welcoming and integrating newcomers into the church and facilitating community events for us all to be part of. It was a blank slate. I was to build and equip teams to do this work.
The next section comes from notes that Robin had made for an address that she had been invited to give to Baptist pastors in Dunedin just 2 weeks ago. Robin was going to be speaking to them about her journey with a terminal illness, reflecting on what she had learned as a person and as a pastor. I have been an associate pastor at North Point since early 2005. In August 2008, I was diagnosed with breast cancer and underwent treatment lasting just over a year. In late 2009, early 2010, a tumour reappeared on my sternum and investigations revealed that the cancer had returned and it was spreading. I accepted further rounds of chemo until last month when I decided, in discussion with doctors and with family, to cease treatment since the adverse side effects of any treatment outweighed the very small benefit that chemo provided. In my own mind, though, the distinction was clear. I was not surrendering to cancer, but to God. I will continue to fight the cancer any way I'm able, but I want my hope to be located in God. I'm happy to accept the comfort and relief from pain any other forms of medication offer me, but ultimately we're all terminal cases. And since I know that my life cannot be separated from God, it is His presence that I want to pursue above all else.
In the 2 years that Robin battled cancer, there were a lot of people who asked themselves or her, how could God let someone like her get cancer? Isn't she devoting her life to God? Surely God wouldn't let this happen. In her record of her journey with cancer, Robin said this: in any relationship, the people involved want at heart to be loved and accepted for who they are rather than for what they do. My love for God is not dependent on Him doing stuff for me, arranging my life into nice, tidy, comfortable, undeserved, undisturbed little categories. I have reflected much on the imagery of motherhood. Our love as mothers for children, in the normal course of events, is fiercely protective. But even that is insufficient to protect our offspring from the uncertainties of a life in a world still bearing the stain of sin. Drunk drivers, events of nature, natural forces, unexplained illnesses still claim the lives of those dearest to our hearts. In such times, the living mourn with and share the pain of those they are forced to stand helplessly by and watch struggle, however fiercely we love them. Love also aches with the object of its passion. It is only in recent years I have come to a more mature understanding of the way in which Jesus shares our sorrow. I've often read of a person's rejection of God on a basis of his need to torture his own son on the cross in order to satisfy his demands for a sacrifice equal to the weight of our sins. I totally agree. I couldn't love that kind of God either. The God I image is not some heavenly puppeteer orchestrating the affairs of the world from a safe and uninvolved distance. He is an unceasingly present God. All things, persons, places, events, times, joys and heartaches are in Him. He shares my experience of cancer, my fear and apprehension, my struggles and doubts, even my anticipation, but with one important, potentially life-changing difference. Christ shares my darkness and bears my hope because He has been this way before and triumphed.
Robin wrote this in her personal spiritual journal in February this year when the cancer had reappeared. All pretense is stripped away, and I think I understand what it means to know only Christ crucified and His resurrection. I choose to believe You are here, Mother, Father, God, and that Your love overlooks all the sin and weakness of my human condition. There is realization, too, that this is what I have longed for and prayed for, to surrender myself fully to God's purposes, to want only what Jesus wants to do in and through me, to count my life as nothing, and to find the courage to be transformed into someone who wants only what Jesus wants.
Later in the same month, in the same journal. Tonight I am very tired and have begun to get anxious about the future. But now at the end of the day, I am reminded again, Lord, that our lives are such a fleeting breath. The days given to us are a gift and not a right. Life is not meaningless when it's lived in service to You, but the demand is different from what at first appears. To lay down one's life is to truly take it up, to surrender our hopes and dreams to you, our Isaacs, is a way to an abundant life.
Robin wrote this for the pastor's conference, expressing how she was relating to Christ in her illness. It is in coming to Jesus that each of us finds the courage to recognize ourselves for what we are, and then to accept ourselves because we're accepted, pardoned, and loved by Jesus just as we are. It doesn't stop here, though, because in the creating and renewing power of Christ, we are able to be reconciled, restored, and transformed, to become day by day more like Christ, to claim and recover all that is true about us in Christ. The sufferer of some fatal disease, whether experiencing physical healing or not, is in no way deprived of the opportunity to become truer to Christ's own image. Perhaps their situation even accelerates this process of transformation as they focus on the essentials of life and faith. Much that is dross inevitably falls away. Jesus, my life is too short to be patient.
The next two sections are from Robin's big essay for the doctoral programme. There are a couple of big words and quotes from other authors, but we can cope with that. This is the end of her essay, concluding her story so far, where God had taken her in her 51 years of life. In this wilderness named cancer, thinking proves more of an obstacle than ever to discovering who I truly am in God. As frightening as it is, I'm being reminded that descent into the unknown can be the place to discover treasures otherwise beyond our reach. The saints of history universally claimed these deserts of life and spiritual experience as occasions for growth and even essential to salvation, the return of ourself to Christ. One way of describing this way of progress is as the stages of purification, illumination, and union with God. Universally, and in concord with Brueggemann's model of orientation, disorientation, and reorientation, they identify prayer with this process, a pattern of struggle followed by insight and then by rest. In light of this, I cling harder than ever to the centrality of the cross of Christ as both truth and metaphor, ever hopeful of my own Easter Sunday. This eschatological hope is not one that steels itself against the reality of pain and suffering, or digs a trench in which to wait the messianic rescue. Divested of all my certainties, I stand naked before God, acknowledging my sins and gifts, together in expectation of receiving more of the grace of the gospel, attaining to the wholeness Christ offers us in this world, and hope for the next. I am invited to discover again and again that it is in the ploughed field that seed promising new life is sown, and therefore to own a theology that allows that our intercession does not often result in what we expect or enjoy. I am led to understand that the joys and sadness of life can, if we allow them, provide further lenses through which we meet both God and ourselves in greater measure.
Robin continues, I have become someone who wants to handle ever more gently and wisely the privilege of the work of caring for souls. Nowin proposes that mature religion is integral in nature, marked by the constant willingness to shift gears, to integrate new insights, and to revise our positions. I hope to be able to do this while still upholding the distinctiveness of the Christian tradition and the uniqueness of Christ. I don't want to be looked to as someone who has the answers, but as someone who asks, even lives, better questions. I want to remain a faithful, open, honest, sensitive friend of God who can embrace the joys of life as well as face the darkness that remains within me. James Fenhagen observes that the movement of the Spirit in prayer is always to lead us beyond our own limited horizon to a new dimension of encounter with the world. My image of God is no longer confined to that of a Father who must be pleased, but I still hope I gladden his heart. Although I sometimes forget, I know I am truly and deeply loved, that I bear his image and am enlivened by his Spirit. I am therefore capable of more than I can imagine for myself. As familiar ground has given way to uncharted territory, spiritual transformation and new dimensions of ministry encounter and missional activity have emerged for me. My hope is that having recognised God's presence in my continuing cycles of death and rebirth, to better honour his activity in the lives of those I share the journey with.
Thank you all. Robin had written out this quotation from a book called Seeds of Sensitivity in one of her journals. The quotation says, "Isn't it crazy that most of us are so concerned about how many years we will be on this earth when we are not even living sensitively in the time we have now?" Our hope is that today we will be inspired by how Robin lived and died to live sensitively for the rest of the days God grants us, 7 days a week. It seems to me that the key to spirituality in a 7-day faith is living attentively and sensitively, ever aware of what God might be saying to us, as I think Robin demonstrated in her life and her writings.